Welcome everyone to this special episode of Kiwi Talks to review Donkey Kong Bonanza. I am joined by two amazing developers from Retro Studios past. Kynan Pearson, who was a designer on Donkey Kong Country Returns, and Ted Anderson, who was an environmental artist on Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze. How's it going, guys?
Oh, doing right.
Fantastic.
Good to hear. I'm going to get straight into this thing. So I thought the best place to start would actually be with the 2D sections in Donkey Kong Bonanza, since obviously you guys have some familiarity with that. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. Was it a bit nostalgic? Were you guys having your development hats on, like looking at everything and being like,
It's hard not to.
I think we did it better.
I was just like, I kept having to like stop myself from looking at it, but as like a development artist to be like, oh, okay, that's why they're doing that. Okay, all right, interesting. And they're integrating this thing into this. Oh, okay. Yeah. But no, it was definitely nostalgic.
Yeah, it was nostalgic, but I think that, like, I love the fact that it was included, but there's also that aspect of because it wasn't the primary focus of the game, there were limitations on some of the things that they would do and kind of how they accomplished those goals. So very cool that it was included, but I couldn't help but look at it from the perspective of kind of the experience of working on a dedicated 2D game.
Right. I could see that, yeah, especially, you know, from a design angle, you know, looking at a, you know, sudden switch over from how you're handling the game to, you know, playing it in a very, very different way.
Yeah. I was quite surprised because I thought there would be more, because I think all of the 2D levels were in the trailers and there's only like, what, 5-6 of them?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. The DLC, I did not.
No, I didn't grab it. But was there anything in particular that stuck out to you with those sections?
There's probably a greater conversation to be had about the game as a whole before we kind of dive into the specifics.
Yeah, well, we could do that. Yep. Okay. Yeah, well, you can lead, Kynan.
Yeah, I think that basically because of the nature of it being a fully 3D game and because of destruction and the voxelization of all of the core level geometry, it imposed some limitations on both the camera and on the structure that they built environments in the 2D stuff, just because it was all still part of the same building blocks that they used to build the core. So I think that some of those limitations of the destruction, the voxelization of stuff, as well as the just basically that the primary camera was built to be 3D freeform, you know, open freedom, meant that they just couldn't polish and contextualize the 2D world themes in the same way that you could if it was just a fully crafted experience where none of the background components and any of those things had to fit in with the way that they had built and structured the rest of the game. Hopefully that makes sense.
No, I'm picking up what you're putting down in the sense that, like, it's something that I've run into with, like, a lot of voxel games is that the emphasis on the destruction of the terrain becomes such a focus that it's hard to anchor in specifically created environment elements. So you end up with a lot of smaller stuff because it's easier to tuck that in around edges of where the voxels meet rather than, like, you know, have very specific stuff. Like when we were working on, you know, Donkey Kong Country Returns, you know, the way we would get, like, you know, a gray box level from design and then just kind of like fit the art to whatever was needed for very specific parts led to a very, like, bespoke environment. Whereas with voxels, you have to emphasize the voxels, you know, the destructive elements of it. But at the same time, like Kynan's saying, it doesn't really leave a whole lot of room for very bespoke environmental art assets.
Yeah, well, I suppose with any game, right, it's always a matter of time and resource and where you choose to invest it. And that can be at the expense of something else. So it's all about the decisions you make early on.
The heart and soul of the game is destruction. And so that is the showcase. Like, that's the big primary focus, the impressive thing that they spent their time on and built the game around. And I think that the 2D levels don't fully take advantage of that element because they're fighting between, you know, the nostalgia of what they're producing, but also not necessarily, you know, like they can't build the non-interactive, you know, background set pieces that were almost required in the 2D games, but they're taking advantage of different stuff. And so it's kind of, it's a cool addition and a great, you know, like throwback, and, you know, your heart swells anytime they pluck the nostalgia strings, but you know, it's not the focus of the game, and the primary focus of the game fits more in with kind of a new Nintendo philosophy, but I'll discuss that later as part of a different subject.
Yeah, and I suppose what did you guys feel about in regards to the animal mechanics, right? The different transformations.
Oh, the bonanzas? Yeah.
Yeah, the bonanzas,
Yeah, I actually really liked that. I thought it was a fun way to integrate kind of something similar to, you know, stuff like Rambi and whatnot, but have it much more directly controlled by the player rather than something you're going to ride that might take you a place or modify your gameplay, but in a very different way. So you were still moving through the world as you would with DK, but with just different powers, and that felt more immediate, if that makes sense.
Yeah, do you agree, Connor?
I do. In some ways, the transformations is kind of a lay... I think that having the animal companions in the country series pose some limitations. Having DK be able to access new abilities on command and switch between those while you're in Bonanza opened up a lot of opportunities. But I think that Motokura-san, his prior game was Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
And so he was the director on this. And so Odyssey was about possession, and then you would get new mechanics to utilize. And so I think that this is this game is foundationally takes some of a lot of the elements of Mario Odyssey and just remixes them into its own interpretation. But I think that the transformations were interesting. I didn't personally take advantage of them unless it was critical path required to do so. Like, I wasn't constantly transforming and utilizing abilities. I was playing primarily as DK. And then if it was like, oh, here's the surface that I can't run over, then boom, I'll switch into Zebra. Or if I needed, you know, additional jump height, I'd switch into Snake. But I wouldn't use the combination of, like, I'd switch into Snake, and then all of a sudden I'd try and toggle over to switch into Bird and then Glide. And so, like, taking full advantage of all of the different things that you could do with the transformations. But I thought that it was a signature component of the game. But, you know, maybe for only 15% of it. And not fully required outside of just the gated mechanisms of progression.
So that brings up an interesting point that it was something that popped into my head because I could see what you're saying with that. And what it is one of the things I've been thinking increasingly, just because I've got, you know, younger kids, they play a lot of games, weirdly enough, for the dad like me. But they play them in a very different way. And so, you know, when they were checking this out, they like were changing all the time and playing it very different. Cause I was playing very similar to how you were playing it, Kynan. And so we got to play this over at a friend's house fairly recently, which was great. And the kids were playing it where they were just switching just for fun sometimes. And then just like a lot more rapid pace than ever I was going to. So it was really interesting. I was wondering if there's like a generational change in the approach of the player to the gameplay.
I Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I think that it's both a generational difference with the player base, but also a philosophical difference with Nintendo's design philosophy going into the modern era. So I think that if you look at like Mario Odyssey and Tears of the Kingdom, they like Nintendo traditionally has always been about kind of like build interesting mechanics and then create scenarios that require players to use those mechanics in a way that showcases those mechanics. And I think in modern Nintendo titles, that has actually switched to create a sandbox of mechanics and then do not gate players from using their own freedom in, you know, overcoming obstacles in any way they want to. So there's there's basically like a design mentality of freedom. So it's like with Zelda, there's not, you know, it's not you use the bow to shoot the eyeball and then the door opens. It's kind of like, no, there's something blocking you. And there's 400 other mechanics that you can use to get around it. And, you know, Donkey Kong Bonanza is actually the next, you know, wave of that philosophy, which is basically like, there are obstacles, but you can blow through a wall however you want. You can kind of climb up onto surfaces and like use the mechanics of being able to surf on something and then toggle off of surf and to throw it down into the ground and then, you know, like use any number of free form mechanics however you choose to try and overcome obstacles. And I think that the Bonanzas actually play into that as well. Like they give you a ton of let's say banandium fuel or whatever the term is for the gold, like your gold meter fills up so that you can practically stay in Bonanza form for almost the entire game, depending on the areas that you're in. But they don't ever force you to do that in order to overcome something. It's like, no, you can take the long way. There's always a default route. And then there's just the freeform freedom of like, there's, you know, 50 different solutions for this terrain.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they've been approaching that more and more since the Breath of the Wild days and Odyssey, right? You're starting to see it a lot more just in Nintendo's games that they make.
Yeah, like even like Mario Kart has the open world components of basically like get to the next destination. How you get there is kind of up to you. They have the you know, open world mode where you're just freeform able to drive around wherever you want and do whatever you want in whatever order. Like I think that freedom is the new expression of Nintendo's design philosophy. Tears of the Kingdom, build whatever you want anywhere. I mean, it's like it's obvious when you just say it outright that Nintendo's new philosophy is freedom instead of kind of mechanical challenges. Mm-hmm. But they still have the depth of mechanics they always have. And sometimes, in many ways, they're opening up mechanics that afford you way more open-ended freedom to break the game in interesting ways.
Yeah, that must have been an interesting, you know, thing with a game as wide open as this to try and find ways that don't soft lock the game. You know, it's just kind of like what you were talking about is I feel like a much more articulate version of kind of what I was going at, because like what you were talking about with like the, you know, the open worlds, you can kind of go everywhere and do anything. It made me think of like, you know, just the generational divide of like, you know, the earlier voxel games where you can just go and you can build anything you want to do and do anything you want to do and you can explore everywhere you want to go. And then also, you know, the changeover from like even multiplayer games from like this is an arena and it's a small arena and maybe it's just a series of hallways to something like Fortnite where it's just it's very open. You go anywhere you want to go and that the battles are going to happen where the battles are going to happen. And so like it feels like, you know, that idea of freedom in gameplay and allowing the player the agency to do kind of more of what they would want to do and craft their experience around how they play, very much like you're saying, Kynan, is like I think it's very wise that Nintendo grabbed onto that as, like, you know, the zeitgeist, if you will, of how players are playing.
Yeah, in some regards, it's the generational difference, as we were talking about earlier, where I think that friction points and basically like forced challenges, where it's like, this is the correct way to do something, and if you don't do it, you fail, is an old mentality that Nintendo used to actually do exceptionally well, and they would give you the tools that you needed to overcome any obstacle. Now they're just kind of like, okay, we don't want to create parts of the game that actually prevent you from proceeding. Mm-hmm. So there are tons of solutions. There's always going to be a solution for everything, and some of them can be much more long-winded and passive, and some of them can be much more direct and skill-oriented. But, you know, even from the structure of this game, like, it's one of the things that I still prefer, you know, Mario Odyssey's structure of a world and objectives within that world, and you accomplish a certain amount of them, and then you can proceed and you go to another world. Whereas this, you can almost literally just like critical path gun it through levels without even like getting bananas, like the like the big banana clusters. It's like those are all optional. All of it's optional. There's a critical path where you just run up and you start wailing on the void key, and then you just drop to the next layer. And it's like, okay, I didn't even have to play the vast majority of the level. Those things come in if you want. And it's kind of like, that is part of it. It's like, what do you want to do? How do you want to play it? And I think it's interesting. And it doesn't always work out for me, but I see it working out for the broader audience way more just because of that open-ended nature.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was very, I suppose, curious in terms of what they chose to honor in the old 2D games and where they chose to go in a different direction with the 3D stuff. Mm-hmm. I think because of the focus being so much on destructible terrain and the animal transformations, you don't actually see much with stuff like the barrels, the very iconic stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Which I was actually expecting more of.
So I think that like the game, for me, is a little bit of a beautiful mess. It is a first attempt at, you know, pulling off this grand vision with all of the... Like, I love the fact that basically DK is given, you know, first place in placement of just basically, like, he is now one of Nintendo's... valued primary characters, and I think that could only have come from Koizumi-san, Motokura-san, the Mario team taking on DK. I love that it like paid off and kind of leaned in on being on acknowledging Rare's significant contributions to not only the 3D DK, but the Donkey Kong country fiction and Rare art direction. And I mean that by, like, things have the googly eyes, and it felt almost like Nintendo actually acknowledging and adopting some of the Rare philosophies and some of the artistry, so that there was a comfort level in what they were doing, even though it was totally new and it feels like it's its own thing.
Yeah.
But it also feels almost like a long lost, as if they had hired people from Rare that continued some of the character components that they were so well known for, and that they really embellished their games with.
Well, yeah, no, especially from the art side of things, kind of, and I completely agree. There's some very Rare style stuff, and I thought it was really pretty charming for me, like, as an artist, to see, like, you know, there's all those pre-rendered games back in the day, you know, all the 3D stuff was like, how do we show it off as 3D? Well, it has to have a giant specular glint, you know, so that you know this was rendered somewhere. But they did it in such a really beautiful way on the material definitions of different things, where I was like, oh my goodness, this is like, you've made it look pre-rendered, but I'm actually like able to go all the way around it the entire time and then interact with it in a destructible way. Or that, you know, even the character designs, you know, the big kind of chunky rounded shapes and the googly eyes, like you're saying, like there was a really lovely homage there. And I feel like they really captured that look in a modern way. That worked. Yeah. You know, initially I was kind of like, ooh, that is a specular map. And then I saw what they were doing and I was like, oh, okay, I'm picking up what you're putting down. Yeah.
Yeah. But, even from a, like almost a Banjo-Kazooie-esque, like the googly eyes and the garble speak, and all of those components come through, but it's not something that Nintendo doesn't have history with, like, you know, Cappy being a hat with googly eyes on it. So that team already, you know, does that. But yeah, and like, as you were saying, it does have almost that pre-rendered asset quality look from the art direction standpoint, captured in 3D. It's unique. It's interesting.
It makes it feel like
I was a little. No, you go. This is all interesting.
I was just going to say it was interesting to me because, like, that almost really kind of reinforced the playful nature of the universe, and that everything did kind of feel because, like, that pre-rendered look almost looks and feels like the plastic toys you would play with during, like, the, you know, the 70s and 80s. Because, you know, material definition on a, you know, on a cast toy was probably pretty difficult to pull off. But it made a very playful universe. And I thought that was kind of a cool thing, especially with the freedom to kind of go everywhere and do anything. Really grasped onto that idea that, you know, sometimes you're going to be playing with your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the coffee table or on the couch or whatever. But in your child's mind, it's something completely different, you know? And so I just really enjoyed that.
I think an iconic part of the Donkey Kong Country series is the soundtracks, primarily David Wise's soundtracks. And I did feel his absence in this game.
I would agree. I don't, you know, but
well, more so in terms of the new stuff, like the remixes. Brilliant. I think brilliantly done. Any remixes of his stuff. Yeah.
Getting into spoiler territory.
Yeah, we'll get to spoilers.
When they start bridging the gap and more of those things start coming in, mm-hmm. I think that actually, you know, played up tugging at your heart because of the familiarity.
Right, and I feel like that's got to be a careful tightrope to walk as a creative, because you don't want to dip so hard into fan service that you don't tread any new territory, but you definitely want to make it still feel like a world that is familiar to that universe. And, you know, I thought that they did a pretty darn good job of that. You know, there were some really catchy tunes. I ended up with one of them pretty well stuck in my head one evening. So, I don't know. I just greatly enjoyed it.
I think the soundtrack to me didn't sound like Donkey Kong outside of the remixes. It sounded Mario like. I think with the, I think that's more what I'm getting at. With Tropical Freeze, right? It has, even though it's predominantly new stuff from David Wise, it inherently sounds Donkey Kong esque.
Right. Okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like it was probably a little it is its energetic. Own beast.
Yeah, it was more energetic. But I there's a part of me that wonders, I'm like, why don't you just hire David Wise? I mean, he's a contractor. I mean, you could have just hired him. But maybe it's the whole Japanese-English thing. But then Yamamoto-san has worked with Retro on every single, Retro game, pretty much, since Prime 1. So, I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, They have the composer that they use, and I think that there's a lot of stuff that they do under the hood that is sophisticated that I think goes unnoticed and had to be accounted for, i.e. the Pauline, like everything had to be on the metronome, Pauline being able to hum and sing along a little bit as you're going through with the navigation method, the vocalization they needed, you know, because like they'd already worked through all the details from like Super Mario Odyssey, having, you know, New Donk City, that the big, you know, set piece moment of the festival, and like full singing audio, and then full singing audio during the end Bowser sequence and all that stuff. And I think that, you know, they incorporate a lot of those elements that they'd already worked out how to, you know, how to do with the chemistry that that team has. So I think that, I think there's a reason they didn't go with David Wise. And this is like a new, like it's a new franchise point. Like, it's not trying to be Donkey Kong Country. It's not trying to be DK 64. It's not trying to be any of the Returns Tropical Freeze stuff. It is like the birth of Mario's new, or not Mario's, but DK's new 3D adventure from the perspective of the Mario team.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
Yeah.
That I didn't actually think of. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that you mention it and put words to it, like, yeah, it feels like a new springboard. Yeah. Or perhaps a new rocket barrel.
I mean, I mean, Nintendo often gets quite a bit of crap, I feel, which is unjust, about them relying on nostalgia too much. But I don't actually think they do that. I think they usually, they make the core gameplay loop, and then at the end, they, it's almost like they sprinkle nostalgia as the icing on the cake.
Yeah, it's not even required. You don't even have to have known the original source material to enjoy their interpretation of how they're utilizing it. And so I, like, I don't want to get into the spoiler territory yet of the end game, because I think that's a whole discussion you know, is worth having. But yeah, that like the nostalgia is not required.
Yeah.
In order to enjoy the things that they do still have as throwbacks. Like, it still are all ingredients to make a beautiful cake that tastes great on its own, instead of having these little plastic chunks stuck in it, and you're just like, that's not edible.
That's a really good way to put it. I like that.
I was going to say, do you guys have a layer, a specific layer that really resonated with you?
Oh, well, like Tynan was just mentioning, I don't want to get into like the spoilers of like the places, you know, but, you know, the New Donk City was awesome. I really loved that, especially in the last fight, the metamorphosis that happens. Like, oh, that's extremely my jam. Like, I love that. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, this is the weird part. Like, I love the stuff that they did building up the Void Company. I don't necessarily think that the layers thing worked for me in terms of all of the environments having established set pieces and like feeling like distinct, unique to themselves locations until they started on the latter parts of the game. So I think the entire game was leading up to, you know, that beautiful reveal moment in the latter parts of the game. I appreciated, I would say, the prismatic prison for just how odd it kind of was, as a punctuation point of the identity of the game itself. I don't remember the name of the level, but it was basically when you get thrown in jail. But outside of that, you know, all of it goes towards the New Donk City stuff, and then into the end game.
Yeah, I really enjoyed a lot of the layers. I thought they were good, and it felt to me like they were just building and building and building on it. I one of the ones that stuck out with me was the sweet.
The food kingdom.
Yeah, okay. I thought that was good. Especially from an artistic perspective.
That one felt like it had its own theme. Like, you were basically, and just to clarify, that's the one where you're building up the hamburger.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, that has tons of personality and comes across. I think that, like, that's the problem is, like, I can kind of go through and I can go, like, oh, that was the ice, that was the lava, this was the beachy. Like, mm-hmm. I can kind of do that, but it's not until you hit that part where you're like, okay, cool, like, this is the, it's hard to find the one defining word, and it's like I don't even remember the names of them because they're also layers. It's just like layer 5, layer 12, and you're just like so it doesn't give you the vocabulary to really communicate it. But yes, I agree with you that actually was a really good world.
Yeah,
good layer.
What did you guys think of Void Kong?
Void Kong for me didn't work as well as Xant, where it was like when I was playing Twilight Princess, Xant felt like they were building him up to be a replacement for Ganon. And I was like, oh, he is awesome. Like, there are awesome things about... So Void Kong for me had about as much personality as the bunnies from Odyssey. Like, that entire cast of characters. Like, yeah. I think they actually kind of pulled these off more because they had fewer. So you understand them a little better, but I think that ultimately it was almost a disservice, kind of like Mandalorian throwing in Luke at the end, where it's like all of the characters that they built up didn't matter as much because finally Luke was there. And so this is kind of like all of the characters they built up were not there to really express themselves and become permanent, you know, emplacements in the Kong franchise. They were there so that the payoff at the end felt like it, you know.
Right. That's yeah, kind of my 100%. Read on him as a fake out big bad, which was like, oh, he's just disposable. Oh, okay. Well, see you never. Like,
yeah, he had good personality. I hope that, and maybe we're like, I don't know when we want to rip the Band-Aid off and actually go into the spoilers.
Let's just do it now. Let's just do it now.
We probably should. So, it's hard not to.
Yeah. Yeah.
It breaks my heart a little. Okay. No, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that Nintendo have just been on fire as of late, I feel, in terms of their endings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just feel they're executing on them very, very well. I think Donkey Kong Bonanza is like the epitome of that in terms of how it builds. And I think that the payoff at the end, with the reveal, is truly amazing.
Yeah.
But I'll let you guys elaborate more.
Ted?
Oh, yeah. I was so delighted for King K. Rool to come back into the scene. And what a treat. That's... You know, without jumping right into the meat of it too much, I guess, it would just say that, like, it's so hard not to just, like, dive into spoilers. So hard with it. But the final that final fight and that final encounter was so much fun. Because at first I was thinking, oh, okay, it's just another little arena fight. And then kaboom, the whole city, and just like, what a treat, man. It was just a lot of fun. I just greatly enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I did as well. And it's a payoff for the fans. It's kind of like when they start teasing in some of the classic music as you're writing the cards down, you're like, are they going to do it? They're going to do it. You know, it's like you have an inkling that it's happening. And then, you know, they pull it off. K. Rool comes back. And then even like the forms that K. Rool takes on, like King of Rot, is awesome. Like, it was just like the whole showcase moment of the encounter, the build up and all of that stuff, I thought was really well pulled off. But as I was going to say before, it's a little heartbreaking to me because, like, as fans, when we started working on Donkey Kong Country Returns, we were asked to create new villains and not, you know, rely on that. And so I think that our limitations allowed for this moment to really have the impact that it did. Sakurai kind of spoiled it a little bit with, like, acknowledging K. Rool so heavily in Smash. But that being said, it's like, it feels like a beautiful tribute to everything that came before, done in a way that I, you know, that only Nintendo can do. And so, beautifully done.
You know, I heard that.
Go on.
I was just going to quickly say that I heard that Nintendo were caught off guard with how popular K. Rool was in Smash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They didn't actually realize the gravity of how popular he was. So I imagine some of the discussion probably came out of that, like, hey, because if you look at the trailer for the King K. Rool trailer in Smash Brothers compared to a lot of the other trailers, it's massive. And there's a huge amount of fandom, I suppose, both in the West and in Japan for K. Rool. And maybe they didn't just really understand the gravity of what impact K. Rool's had, I guess, for Donkey Kong Country fans.
You know, like, I think that Nintendo does a great job, and Motokuro-san's games, like Odyssey in specific, is a celebration of all things. So it's like, there was a celebration of all things Mario, going back to DK, going back to Pauline, going back to the 2D tribute portions in levels where you could jump into the walls. And so I can't say for certain that it wouldn't have already happened. I think it would have. I think because this game is a celebration. I hope if they do another, that instead of having like Void Co. or something like that, that they basically, that they do the super villain team of basically Void Kong, K. Rool, Tiki Tong, and then the Snowmad King. So like just take all of the bosses from the various versions and maybe even Mario, just to go back to the original Donkey Kong, as, you know, personalities to bring into the fold. Because I do feel like Nintendo put Tiki Tong as the last boss in the Donkey Kong portion of the theme park. So it's cool that like that made its way into pop culture. But I think that like it affords them now to acknowledge also a little more of the retro games in the next version, if they, you know, as additional nostalgia to play up and celebrate.
Yeah, you'd almost have your individual worlds right there, because you got your ice world, your kind of tropical world. You know, Krull would definitely have his own place. Mario would probably be some, you know, just even visiting the Mushroom Kingdom as DK would be really a hoot.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go going forward. I was actually expecting at the end when you saw New Donk City, I'm like, are we going to see Mario in this? Is this like a MCU type of thing? Like Nintendo Cinematic Universe, but in gaming form where people appear in other people's games?
I think maybe for whatever the next mainline Mario game is, it feels like that would be more of kind of like the Mario movie brought in Donkey Kong. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're going to get some universe merging again at some point, or at least that's something that they've set up now to have payoff for if they do choose to go that route. I don't know if they will, but it'd be beautiful to see, you know, playable DK and playable Mario in a future Nintendo game.
It seems like they're building towards that. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, because we've seen it in Mario Kart, right? They were already testing the waters with other characters being in Mario Kart 8 in the DLC. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if K. Rool ends up in Mario Kart World DLC at some point.
I mean, here's the thing. Mario Kart and Smash Brothers have already shown that the crossover Nintendo franchises can do really, really well.
Yeah.
And so if it doesn't go outside of the, if it's tastefully done, like I would not want to see Samus show up in you know, the next Zelda game. But I think that where there is already connective tissue there, and you know, DK and Mario are inextricably linked already. So it's gotta happen someday.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Don't do it with everything. Use it sparingly.
Like you're saying,
it has more impact that way.
Yeah, don't do it just because, you know. Yeah, definitely, you know, have those links already established and play with them.
Well,
it's almost like cross-marketing as well. I mean, if you think of it from a marketing perspective, I think it would be a brilliant idea. Because obviously Mario is inherently more popular than DK. And obviously this is the first 3D DK game since... When did 64 come out? Is it 99? I can't remember.
Like, I was in high school.
Somewhere in there. 90, 98.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was... Yeah, it was definitely... I want to say it was before 99.
Yeah. I mean, it was a long time. And even between... Returns came out in 2010. So there's already been numerous times where there's been a bit of a gap with the DK franchise.
Yeah.
And so I think merging the two in some ways is great from a marketing perspective. I'll be interested to see how much DK Bonanza sells in the long run.
I'm very excited to see kind of how well it does.
Right.
Because I think that'll be telling for future plans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mario, by Mario's absence, opened up, honestly, this opportunity for Nintendo to showcase DK in the way that they have. Now it's complicated because the Mario team already has Mario to concentrate on. So are they going to, you know, potentially springboard back and forth between a Mario and a DK and a Mario and a DK from here on out? Or are they going to do that until they realize it's frustrating and then just merge them both? Who knows?
It makes me wonder too. Like you brought up like the marketing aspect of it, and that like part of what makes a merge of universes appealing is like, well, how will these two unique characters play with each other? And so if it leans too much into merging those things, you kind of lose a little bit of what makes each one special. So it's like, you know, having to play it even between, like, you know, having each of them have their own unique experiences that keeps that curiosity available, I would imagine, you know, so that you can actually profit from it later.
Yeah, I mean, they are their own thing. And right now the focus of DK has shifted to destruction. And so just dropping in the expectations that they've created now, maybe the crossover doesn't necessarily work, and they need to stay in their own lane so that they can take advantage of their mechanics uniquely if they don't change. But I would assume, just like anything, Nintendo will find beautiful ways of evolving the concept or completely turning it on its head in the future. So
they are very good at what they do.
One thing that I would say as a parallel is that you can see that this was built on the foundation of Odyssey.
Yes.
So, for instance, all of the systems in regards to the things that you collect and how they accomplish their goals, like the outfit shifts. Like, there's parallels for how NPCs work and functions of the game that feel like they were brought over. And I think that I think it will be interesting to see the next mainline Mario if they kind of continue with some of those core expectations, like, you know, the outfit swapping, all the stuff like that has become now, you know, between these two games, systems that feel like it'd be difficult to go back to not having. But one thing that I wanted to mention, just because, like, we hadn't talked about it, but man, the control scheme for this game feels a little bit complicated. And there are aspects of I died multiple times just because of the jump button placement being far right instead of bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that all of the triggers do something unique, so when you're trying to mix and match, it does not feel like the control scheme is as approachable and intuitive as, let's just say, Mario. And Mario Odyssey is kind of complicated, more complicated because of the, you know, depth and variety of things that you can do to, you know, use Cappy in interesting ways. And I found I do all of those things kind of effortlessly, but Donkey Kong, like, I still transforming into Bonanza form, jumping, gliding, and dropping a bomb feels to me like I'm like, which I, you know, and so it's like I'm constantly relearning, because there are times where I'd try and jump and I'd be like pounding the ground and I'm like, ah, I meant to. And then I would, you know, so it's like I'd transform into the bird thinking that I'm going to jump into a glide. And then all of a sudden I just fall into the lava and I'm like, ah.
Yeah.
So what do y'all think about the control scheme? Do you feel like it's, did it work for you? And like, were you able to pick it up and you've got it fully memorized and it's just easy to.
I picked it up. Yeah, but also it probably depends on, I think, how often you're playing it, or if you're playing it and then you're going and playing something else and then coming back. I pretty much only play DK, and so I was able to get the gist of it. But I can imagine if I was playing DK and then going and playing something else and then coming back to it, then I'd be like, oh, wait, what the heck? What's going on? So I don't know if you were playing other games at the time, kind of.
I was, and over a prolonged period of time.
Yeah, yeah. So that could have something to do with it.
It could,
I had a similar situation with Dread, because I was playing Dread in between something else, and then I'd come back and I'd get, you know, what is it, Control City? Yeah.
Crab Claw.
But, no, that was, yeah, I know exactly what you mean by that, because like, hitting the wrong button and being like, that should be jump. I tend to be like a lot more, like I try to find something that works for me control wise in a game. And, so kind of similar to what you're talking about, Kynan, there were times where I did end up kind of getting a little bit, you know, oopsed with the buttons. And then just kind of as much as I could, like I said earlier, I didn't use the bonanzas nearly as much as say like my kids did. And for me, a large part of that was just not wanting to have to juggle those, buttons nearly as much. I think, you know, part of it, you know, maybe comes down from like, you know, that, you know, the other side of having so much freedom in gameplay means that you now have an expanse of things that you can do. And that you have to, give that to the player in a way that, you know, all of a sudden they've got oodles of buttons and switches and toggles to hit in order to navigate this world, rather than having, you know, something that's much more direct and immediate, where it's like, okay, I have to jump over these objects and this one picks things up and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's got to be a bit of a balancing act. And, you know, for me, kind of like what you're saying, Kynan, it became a little erratic at times. But then again, on the other side, like my kids picked it up just fine, which is, you know, maybe their fingers aren't all messed up from years of working on computers. They're so limber.
Yeah, could be an old dog's new tricks thing as well. Just that I've got so much memory of other games' control schemes that you know, my hard drive is filled. Yeah. But it's like, one of the things for me is like, I know that I'm like, you have the clap, which is basically your mechanism for, you know, finding objectives and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But then you also have the grab, which is grabbing the ground in the same motion as slamming the ground. And then you have your, you know, I can hammer the ground to go down into it. So there's three buttons that are actually DK slapping the ground, mm-hmm. that all do different things. And then like, so I would run into issues where it's just like, I want to take full advantage of, I'm going to grab a piece of the ground, I'm going to surf on it. I'm going to jump while surfing, but then it's like, what button do I press to...
Yeah, whatever you do, don't make ground it so pound that I can the thing that you're surfing.
Not surf, so that I not surf, and then I can throw the block down below me so that I can get extra height, and then which of my, you know, moves in the air give me a little bit of stalled descent, so punching in the air kind of gives you a little bit of gravity hang while you're going. So it's just, there's all these things that are advanced techniques that I feel were really much more intuitive for me to do in something like Mario Odyssey, where it's like, you know, I can roll, I can jump, I can do the ground pound, throw Cappy, hop from that, bounce off of Cappy into the air, do the same. And those felt way more natural for me to do advanced techniques than DK, which allows you even more freedom than what you get with Cappy, but it's just like, it doesn't make intuitive sense to me which of those things like in combination with each other requires more finesse, because there's way more buttons to use effectively. Anyways, don't want to beat a dead horse with that, but it racked my brain a little bit to switch between games, come back, and then fully remember all of the details of the control scheme.
I think also when you're incorporating pretty much every single button on a controller, naturally that can just become a bit more difficult to master. I can't even remember how many buttons you use with Mario Odyssey, but I think the control scheme is a bit more simplified, I guess.
Crouch, jump, Cappy is effectively all you need to know. And this is, there's four buttons. You need up attack, mid attack, down attack, jump, grab, slap. And then I don't even remember what the triggers do, but I get mixed up between two sets of triggers. Even when I look at, you know, the on-screen messaging, it's kind of like, is this, you know, I don't know the difference between right trigger and right bumper, RBRT, and then,
oh my goodness. Yeah.
So it's just,
you're gonna make me go cross that after this.
Yeah, but
that's understandable though.
Like I said, it's beautiful. Like, the game is really well crafted, and does some things that no other games really do, and takes advantage of the destructible terrain in ways that I think have been kind of lost and aren't referenced. But it's just like, destructibility in the world was something that was so significant in some of the earlier generation games, and it has kind of gone away a little bit, at least for console games. PC games, there's still a ton of stuff that allows you to deform terrain and all of that stuff, but I think that it was a genius scheme for them to basically build a non-destructible armature under the surface and then build voxelized terrain around all of it. Mm-hmm. So you will always have some form of critical path that you can take advantage of, even if you destroy everything in the world. But they do allow you to make some bad, put yourself into really bad situations and not enjoy the game as much, because the camera goes crazy and you've like during certain boss encounters, I like drilled holes down all over, so all the terrain is just like lumps bumps and with overhangs and everything, and it still works, but it's frustrating to play because camera's slapping into like first person, mm-hmm. and then pulling back out, and like I'm trying to like, I'm climbing but I'm also going up and down over surfaces, so it's kind of like, if you're playing the optimal way, you don't run into those issues, but they do give you the tools to create a frustrating experience for yourself if you want to.
Yeah, they sure do.
Or if you don't know any better.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a couple of times with me in terms of the camera where it would glitch out or something, and I'm like, what is going on right now?
Amazing first attempt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is groundbreaking, no pun intended.
No pun intended.
You know, for Nintendo. but you know what? It is, you know, it's like, it's got to be difficult.
You know, one of the things I wanted to mention really quickly that we didn't, we kind of got close to talking about earlier, but one of the things, like, art direction-wise that I was really enjoying was, especially in the final battle, it, weirdly enough, reminded me a lot of playing, like, some of the boss fights in Resident Evil 7. Just, like, the transformations, the changeover in the battle, and then also, like, the body horror that was going on of, like, you know, King K. Rool, like, you know, changing, or some of the other bosses kind of, like, changing, and there's, like, lots of goopy forms, lots of, like, you know, change over from, like, you know, the him initially, then, you know, very goldified and then very goopified. It was just like, it really kind of reminded me of that, or like at least scratched a certain weird itch with it. So, you know, and of course, like, I couldn't, you know, bring over the kids and be like, hey, you guys want to play a really scary game to understand what I'm talking about? No. So, but I thought it was interesting. It was just something that like, weirdly enough, like, pinged inside of me when I was playing it.
I mean, there are a lot of mutations in terms of, like, some of the form factors that bosses take are also fully destructible, and you have, like, the little gloopy things coming together to, like, create their new forms. I can see what you're talking about, though I don't necessarily make the same connections myself, but, yeah, it also, they had to go with some forms that were a little more, I don't want to say surreal, but basically they couldn't have you tearing chunks out of a specific, like, animal form or like
right,
you know, so they would have to create something that looks like a mound of, you know, clumps of rock or something, so that whenever you are like digging down into a one of the boss forms that's not the primary clone characters, that there's things to tear off and it wouldn't feel like horrific and grotesque.
Yeah. Just ripping off his own arm and beating him with it.
I mean, the boss fights were really well done, though. The Void Kong ones, the frame rate drops tremendously because there's just so much going on screen every single time, right? But it was still great nonetheless. And obviously the K-Rool stuff is amazing as well.
Yeah, they had to pull off some very, I don't know, how, like basically gamey but surreal mechanics around certain things. So like whenever you would during the Void Kong fight where you would have to pull up the rock and you throw it and it leaves a path just because it's a certain material type, and it's kind of like, so they had some pretty complex stuff that they were really pulling off. Like you're building terrain to reach Void Kong, and that's actually cool, and it's like a very interesting component, but also requires you to fully understand the aiming mechanisms in the game and the nuances of some of those systems just to like really pull it off. But yeah, I think that, you know, maybe I under appreciated aspects of Void Kong as a character and some of the stuff that they did just because of how much higher it gets whenever you're dealing with the K-Rool nostalgia and payoff.
Yeah, and just a little throwback, so even with the Kremlings, right, when you hit them and they go the same sound effect as well, literally the same sound effect.
It's beautiful that they accounted for that when they built the skeletons, the gold skeletons, because they're basically using the same rig, they're just replacing it with the Kremlings instead of
the
skeletons underneath for the standard enemies, so they do the swap, which is cool.
Yeah. They did a really good job. And even the fake out credits, that was good as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I actually thought it was over. When you fight him in the first fight, I was like, oh, okay, that's the end of the game.
Yeah.
I'd totally forgotten about the whole fake out credits thing. And then obviously it starts and I was like, oh, you know, and then you're going up the tower and stuff. I thought that was just brilliantly done. And it just keeps building and building. I'm like, how long does this go on for?
Yeah, very clever and really well done. I wish that they paid off Pauline's singing mechanics a little more. Like there was never really a point where you had a highlight showcase moment with her singing, and I felt like that was such a critical point that they were making with, like, you know, her being able to remove the void tape, and like whenever you're getting the bonanza forms, like that they have the whole sing sequence, but none of it was tied into gameplay as much, and her singing didn't really pay off as like a mechanical trait used in boss battles as much as I would have hoped. But
yeah,
maybe that's just me.
I wonder if that, like, yeah, and I can kind of pick up what you're talking about there. I wonder if, you know, just through the process of making the game, that they kind of ran into something where it's like that ended up kind of like, you know, on the cutting room floor, as it were. You know, like, we can go somewhere with this, but we don't really need to. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know. But it felt that, yeah, it felt like there was like a little something missing there. Like where's this? Yeah.
Because she sings something during the credits, right? But that's just during the credits and your DK and you're just punching down.
Right.
But, I mean, I thought the voice acting was pretty good.
Yeah.
whoever did the voice acting for her.
Yeah. And there's optional moments where there's a lot of little interstitial dialogue, like whenever you talk to the house character and you build your little safe spots that increase your energy. Whenever you do sleep, Pauline shows up and like basically wakes you up and makes some commentary about the level that you're dealing with or whatever. And there's a lot of those moments that could easily go missed. So she adds a ton of character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that was necessary because with Donkey Kong, you just get, hoo-hoo! You know? Yeah. So you needed something to balance that out.
Yeah, I thought that was really cute. It was just very much like, you know, sleepover with pals kind of thing. So it was cute.
Yep.
Yeah. I imagine some of this stuff will be incorporated into a Donkey Kong film in the near future. I mean, 100% sure a DK film will happen.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think that it's actually announced that they're doing that. But
is it actually announced? Okay. Interesting.
I believe so.
Okay. Well, I suppose we'll find out in due course. I mean, hopefully some of your work in Donkey Kong Country returns or and Tropical Freeze ends up in the film.
I mean, some of it showed up in the Mario film already. And yeah. Yeah, it's already been paid off in that form, and that, you know, warmed my heart so much. Not only to see the stuff show up in the theme park, but in the Mario film, like that was a huge thing for me mm-hmm. personally.
So just to confirm what you've heard, I just looked it up real quick. An untitled Donkey Kong film has recently been registered by Universal Pictures and Nintendo. So it is happening.
Okay. So it is definitely a. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Make a lot of money. Good exposure for the IP. Yeah. You've already got the theme park.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Works. Cool. Well, hey, I'll probably wrap up there. This has been great, guys. Thank you so much for your input. Before we go, any plugs? Anything you need to plug? Anything you want to plug?
Go for it, Ted. I've got nothing.
Oh, sure. This one is like super local. So here in Austin, my team that I work with on the side, Pixel Pushers Union, is going to be putting together an arcade cabinet that's going to have a duo of games, soon to be expanded out to a trio of games, that you can play over at Oddwood Brewing here in Austin, Texas. And that's probably going to be available in early spring. It's going to have a racing game that's kind of akin to Wipeout, a game about flying saucers that's very Roger Corman-esque, B-movies where you're abducting Earthlings, and it's kind of like Rampage through that lens. And then a third game that is a puzzle game that is to be announced. So,
cool.
Sweet. Sweet. I look forward to checking that out. Yeah. So you'll have to share a link with me whenever we wrap this.
Provide the link and stuff, and we can I can provide it in the description.
Sure.
But cool. This has been great, guys. Thank you so much for sparing me your time and providing your input. You've allowed me to look at things through a different lens that maybe I would not have seen otherwise. So much appreciated. That is the show, everyone. Make sure you. Yeah. No problem. Until next time, everyone, stay safe and have a good Christmas.